Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. And as we near the end of the year, album releases are thinning out somewhat, but we do still have a few new ones to discuss. And joining me to get to grips with them is the DJ and broadcaster, Georgie Rogers. Georgie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Later on in the show, we will be talking Christmas music in and around Marika Hackman, who's just released her festive EP. First, we have a couple of non-festive albums, one by Neil Young, one by Peter Broderick. We will start with Neil Young. This is about his 597th album, if I've done the maths right. I could have erred a couple of dozen in either direction. It's called Peace Trail. It is his second album this year alone. His legendary work ethic is not failing him. Where are we, do you think, on the quantity versus quality analysis at this point?
Well, interesting one. I think generally this album is, yeah, I think it's his 38th, which is just, you know, I mean, that's prolific, isn't it, to say the least.
He's been going a while, in fairness.
Yeah, yeah. And this one it's an album of largely acoustic protest songs. He's just got two session musicians involved to do this one. Recorded it about 4 days at Rick Rubin's Shangri-La Studios, all quite quick. I think generally the whole vibe of the album is quite informal. Things were done in one or two takes. It's sort of musings and sketches. And I mean, you can say certainly sense that he has sort of a bit of pep in his step, you know. It's quite an upbeat thing, but it is, yeah, a protest album. So if you're coming to this wanting Harvest or After the Gold Rush or some of the classic Neil Young, you might be slightly disappointed. But there are good bits in it, I felt. Is it like the subject matter is he's very vocal. He's kind of, it's a, you know, a plea, I suppose, for a more sustainable world. He's talking about issues that mean a lot to him. So the subject matter in this is the Native American protests over the Dakota Access Pipeline, environmental destruction, female equality in a track called Show Me, smartphone obsessed society, trigger happy cops. Covers a lot of ground.
I mean, the dynamic there you mention of him writing a song, recording it very quickly, getting it out while the events are still current. This is an obvious throwback to, you know, his response to the Kent State shootings in 1971. I'm going to guess, I could be wrong, 1 or 2 years on the other side of that. But that was obviously, the song Ohio was something he wrote and recorded very quickly, so it provided a soundtrack to the times. As you mentioned, though, there are a lot of issues being tackled on this. Does it come across as nevertheless a focused album, or does it drift at all into kind of angry old man, you know, who is making an album instead of writing letters to his local newspaper in green ink, which is what cranky old men of this age would be doing if they're not Neil Young?
Yes. I think it begs the question, like, is it a bit preachy? Is it a bit self-righteous, I suppose?
Because his protest songs have rarely been subtle.
No. And I mean, there are sort of musings a bit more on his work ethic and on his life, I suppose. You know, when you've been in the game so long and you're Neil Young, he's 71. He needs to find things to write about. You can't just write about like the stuff that you maybe did in the first 20 years of your career. So I think with him, there is a sense of looking inwardly a little bit as well. There's a song called Can't Stop Working, and the lyric is like, bad for the body, good for the soul, might even keep you breathing when you lose control. And he kind of admits to himself that he can't stop working. And so there's that sense that that he will kind of just carry on, and it's just kind of part of his way of life and kind of keeping sane, just to write music and just get it out there. But it does feel like sometimes it's not the fully polished thing. But there are moments on this album, like on the opening of the title track, Peace Trail, it's got beautiful, crunchy guitars on it. And there's another highlight as well, which is a track called Terrorist Suicide Hand Glide. It's also got quite nice electric guitars where the rest of the album is quite acoustic. And I felt at moments, you know, I'm sure PJ Harvey is massively inspired by Neil Young, but her album Let England Shake, where she sort of marries a powerful theme with the instrumentation, where that really works, I feel there's sort of elements of that in this album when it is on point. But then there's other bits I'm not sure that I would kind of rinse and repeat this album.
Okay, well, this is the title track, which you mentioned as one of the highlights. This from Peace Trail is Peace Trail. This is Neil Young.
But something new
That's Neil Young with Peace Trail, the title track from his new album, which is available now on, I've never figured out if it's Reprise or Reprise Records. I've heard both so many times, and I don't know what the definitive one is. But anyway, that's the label it's on, Neil Young, Peace Trail. We should move along to a new EP by Peter Broderick. He is a former member of Efterklang. So he does various things now. He sings, he plays the piano, he writes folk music, he writes film scores. The new album, what is he doing?
Well, so this is his seventh solo album, Partners, only came out in August. So this is sort of very quickly to get some new material from him. He's a classical composer, and this one was born in just one night inside the Grunewald Church, which is just on the outskirts of Berlin. And it's become quite a hotspot for young musicians, especially contemporary composers. You may have heard of Nils Fram, who is on the same label that's putting out this. He recorded The Bells in there, and it's a church that concerts happen in as well. And so this is a 5-track EP, and it's kind of exploring the partnership between the acoustic space and then Peter Broderick's performance on piano and violin. And really, I mean, what better than the acoustics of a piano in a beautiful church?
Indeed. Is this, as you mentioned, he's put out another album already this year, Partners, which came out, actually not even this year, it came out about 5 minutes ago. Partners, well, actually a few months ago. I exaggerate slightly for comic effect. I mean, is this an entirely sort of separate and discrete project?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a homage to the Grunewald Church and to this space. And also, it feels like its own thing. It's only 5 tracks, but it's sort of like just quite loose, emotionally arresting piano and violin pieces. It's quite sad and melancholy. It almost kind of cleanses your soul if you kind of listen to it nice and loud in headphones. And there's no artificial reverbs or delays. So what you really hear is the acoustics of this church that it's recorded in. And I love Erase tapes. I think they play host to so much incredible music, like Nils Fram and Douglas Dare, Oliver Arnold, A Winged Victory for the Silent Chiasmos. They're a very kind of forward-thinking label, and they deal with kind of music of this ilk. There's a track on it called It's a Storm When I Sleep, and that's probably the most dramatic piece of the five. The piano just rumbles and echoes a very rich, bassy sound, and it's just, emotional impact, really. Just a very talented guy, very good at doing the classical thing, and I mean, who couldn't love hearing a beautiful piano?
Okay, well, let's hear a bit of it. This is Low Light from Peter Broderick. That was Peter Broderick with Low Light from Grunewald, which is out now on Erased Tapes. And finally, on the Arts Review, we will have a bit of seasonal festivity. We hear from the singer-songwriter Marika Hackman. She released a Christmas EP, which is a fairly old-school thing to do. It's called Wonderland. We will hear a bit more from Marika in a moment, but introduce it, if you will, Wonderland. Is it something you will be playing either at your listeners or to yourself?
Yes, and I have already played it, in fact. Played it in November, one of the tracks.
There should be laws against that.
I know.
I think there should be laws against broadcasting, doing, or even saying anything Christmassy before. I'm a reasonable man. Lunchtime on December 23rd.
Yeah, I hear you. In my defence, I think it was like the 27th of November. It was right near the end. But I just kind of slipped it in there. There's two original tracks on this, Driving Under Stars and Paper Crown, and then the others, she's covered Winter Wonderland, In the Bleak Midwinter, and the 12th Century Bang O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And to great effect, actually. The whole EP is really beautiful. I think it's not necessarily one you're going to put on and start dancing around the Christmas tree, because as with all Marika, her voice is there's so much kind of tone to her voice, but it can be quite flat and I don't want to use the word drab, because that's not what I mean, but it's quite melancholy and sad and flat in a way, but really beautiful. But this album kind of this EP still feels kind of warm and glowy, and I'd say it sort of captures maybe the point where you've eaten all the turkey and just eating all the food, and you're feeling quite lethargic, and it's dark outside, and maybe it's sort of that kind of side of Christmas rather than, you know.
So there's some adjectives she can put on the poster. Lethargic,
no,
flat,
sounds,
drab.
I don't mean it in that way, but I mean it in a kind of, it's, yeah, she's got such, she really does have such a dreamy voice.
Dreamy's better.
I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say by it, but I don't mean it to be drab, but because it really isn't on this. But it is quite a melancholy feel, this whole EP, her takes on these tunes that we know so well. But then, you know, she puts a suitable amount of sleigh bells jingling in the background, and Driving Under Stars, which is one of the original ones, it sort of feels like an alternative indie take on Chris Rea's Driving Home for Christmas. Like if you could have that, it sort of captures the excitement of getting home for Christmas and, you know, snow and stuff.
Okay, well, let's hear from Marika Hackman.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the rain, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, you're happy tomorrow. Walking in.
I think a Christmas song should be, it's either that sort of, that warm coziness that's kind of slightly nostalgic, or you can go for a kind of cold, wintry feel that's probably more nature-based rather than Christmas-based. I think if you can get both of them in one song, that's probably quite an exciting thing to try and do, match the bleakness of winter and sometimes, and Christmas for some people as well, but also make it feel a bit warm and fuzzy. I went into writing to the two Christmas songs on there probably in a pretty similar way to how I normally write, but it's just having in the back of your mind, you know, that it's got to end up in a certain place, which normally I'm pretty free and easy and it can go anywhere. I wrote Driving Under Stars on the bass, which I think automatically will give it a more upbeat feel because it's you're just writing a bass line on there, it's probably going to be a bit more heavy sounding, a bit grungy or whatever, and put some live drums on it to give it a bit more fun. Writing Christmas songs in the sun, well, in trying to hide in my room from the sun, I think that was the biggest challenge when doing this, mainly because I really don't like hot weather. And I felt very uncomfortable in my room because it's a bit like a greenhouse, and I was just overheating and sort of trying to conjure up all these snowy imagery in my mind. But you kind of just have to, like, separate yourself from that and just go with your imagination, get into the right mindset and just have a go.
The dashboard, the bells have started ringing and you sleep on.
I like listening to like a lot of different stuff. I like choral music a lot. I think that's kind of what makes me feel the most Christmassy. And I think that's why I've picked songs as well, like In the Bleak Midwinter and O Come Emmanuel, because they're kind of classic choral compositions. And when we're at home with my family, and we usually listen to sort of choral stuff on the actual day. So that's probably why it makes me feel like that. But having said that, you know, I love a bit of Mariah Carey and a bit of Wham and stuff. It's fun. Like, that's the whole point. It's kind of, it's just silly Christmas fun.
That's Marika Hackman there on the theory and practice of the Christmas song. Her Christmas EP, Wonderland, is out now or now about. Georgie, before we let you go, it being our last arts review before Christmas, we do need to ask you about your favourite Christmas songs, which is the most obvious question you can ask anybody at this time of year. But do you have an obvious answer or a perverse non-obvious one?
I think I have quite an obvious one, actually. I was sort of thinking about it, and listening to Marika Hackman's EP, and then thinking about Chris Rea's Driving Home for Christmas and that track, Driving Under Stars. I do always kind of get very nostalgic of, you know, if you've been working really close up to Christmas and then you drive home and that song comes on like Magic or whatever. That. But I think my favourite, my all-time favourite has to be White Christmas. And probably the Otis Redding version, just because vocally, I mean, it's quite an innocent Christmas song. It's quite sort of a lilting beauty. It feels very festive when you hear it. It's this, you know, the strings, there's talk of snow and treetops glistening, and it's all quite positive vibes. And Otis Redding's voice on it just is magic.
Well, Otis Redding's voice on anything, I guess. I'm in a bit of a disadvantage when trying to name a Christmas song that evokes those warm, fuzzy feelings, because strangely enough, nobody's written the kind of big-hearted, glowing, nostalgic song about sitting in economy class for 24 hours on your way to Sydney. Unaccountable.
Is that usually nobody,
That's basically my Christmas.
Yeah.
But yes, on that note, Merry Christmas to all our regular listeners. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Georgie Rogers. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Millett. My producer was Holly Fisher. And thanks also to Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be dialing up Toronto to find out what's on TV in North America. For now, thanks for listening. Goodbye.